south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
You know, this show was supposed to go out on Friday, the 24th of November, but I don't know if it will. You ever have one of those days when you get up in the morning and say, hell, I don't want to do anything? Just want to get in a couple more hours of sleep, maybe sit on the patio, catch a few morning rays. In other words, don't you want to get up some days and just say, f*** it? Well, I'm having one of those days, so let's see if we can finish this show and get it off on Friday, or not. Come on, don't tell me you haven't had days like that. I bet you've had plenty. Whether you act on those feelings or not is another thing. Often it depends on how big a nut you have to crack, you know, your bills at the end of the month. Just think of it. If you got no house payment, no car payment, no credit card debt, that's what my dad used to call the life of Riley, because he never got there. Well, I'll tell you, until I hit the ripe old age of, I think, 35, that's when I was back in the States, of course, and I had so many bills, so many payments at the end of the month. There were plenty of times when I'd get up in the morning, I'd feel like crap, and I'd say, oh man, I'm not going in, but I have to. How many times has that happened to you? I bet for some of you, countless times. Because, you know, when you own your own small business, if you don't go in, the phone and the cash register do not ring and the orders don't come in. By the way, and I don't think I've ever mentioned this before, when I decided to come down to Latin America permanently, back in the very early 90s, I decided to liquidate everything. That way, I thought, and I was right about it. If anyone ever sued me or there was a tax lien or anything, there was nothing for anyone to get. And if you think I'm being hyperbolic or an alarmist about all this, I just looked it up. The average American gets sued 7 times in his life. However, that number 7 is misleading, because if you're poor or working class, especially if you're male and under 40 years old, you are likely to be a defendant far more than 7 times. In fact, statistics show, in that case, there's a crude average of about 13 and a half cases in which you'll be a defendant. That's if you're lower middle class or poor in the States. And if anything, that's an underestimate. However, with the average guy getting sued 7 times, tell me that ain't scary. Because every time you get sued, guilty or not, it's going to cost you dough. And the stats show that with 30% of those lawsuits, most of them being civil cases, the court or prosecuting attorney will try to lock up your bank account or put a lien on your house. Question is, how many times have you been sued? Even if you win, it costs you dearly in time, stress, and dough. However, get this, in the same statistical analysis, it says that Asian Americans who are fluent in English are more than 1/3 less likely to get sued in their lifetimes. According to court statistics, average Asian American gets sued 2 times in his life. Same thing goes for Indian Americans, that is, people from India who speak English. I wonder what the wokesters would say about that. Something's got to be done. Where's the equity in that? We got to start suing more Asians and Indians. Which brings us to gringos and expats who have a plan B. Many of them tell me, Johnny, I got my plan B going. I'm moving down to Latin America for good. But I'm going to hold on to 1 or 2 rentals or a piece of a business that I own. Yep, I hear newbie gringos and expats say that all the time. My advice, well, depends how paranoid you are and how much you believe in the U.S. justice system, which is patently unfair, so much so that if you end up getting sued, it's the cost of a civil lawsuit that just might bury you. I know, you say you're an honest, upright American, not the kind to do deals on a wink and a nod. Well, you know, we're not living in the 50s or 60s anymore. I know quite a number of Americans personally, good people, who've been ripped a new asshole by the legal system. But that won't and can't happen to you if you got out of Dodge and sold everything you have in the States. So anyway, if you're an adult living in the USA, you can expect to be sued 7 times in your lifetime. Meanwhile, here in Latin America, with the Latino population anyway, that number, and I looked it up, is less than 1. So a guy living up in the States has a 7 times greater chance of being sued, actually more than 7 times if you look deeply into the numbers, than a Latino living down here in Latin America. However, that picture is totally skewed if you happen to live on the gringo tourist trail. Gringos living there get sued all the time, just like up in the States. Oddly enough, too, there are lots of gringos suing gringos. Anyway, I'm not giving you investment advice here. I'm just reporting on how gringos and expats with a plan B handle the disposition of their properties up in the States. Some of them don't. They hang on. The problem is, as the shit hits the fan more and more, and you're seeing it, we're all seeing it, we can expect there'll be a lot more hungry lawyers out there. If you've got properties paid for up in the States, shit can happen. But back to this business about waking up in the morning, looking around, not feeling so great, and saying, "Fuck it, I'm not getting out of bed." Now, as for me, that does not happen often. I can't even remember the last time that thought came to mind while living here in Latin America. But man, when I was living in the States, heavily grinding away on that treadmill, that thought popped into my head all the time. Funny thing, too, when I decided to liquidate everything before I came down here to Latin America, I actually had a lot less capital, a lot less cash than I thought I had. Isn't that human nature? How sad, huh? We always seem to think our stuff is worth more than it really is. Have you been to a rummage sale lately? It seems everybody overprices their stuff at rummage sales these days. I've seen stuff at the same price as they sell it new in the store. What's wrong with people? However, if you really like something, you just bid low, give them your phone number. More times than not, you'll get it because people just don't have the cash. Yep, we're talking about rummage sales and estate sales. I really like them. If there's anything that I miss about the U.S., is those Saturdays and Sundays you could look in the classifieds and see 10 or 20 different rummage sales or estate sales going on, all within 10 miles of where you're living. I used to love wading through stuff at rummage sales. That's how I picked up all my good tools. Though I was the general contractor on quite a few houses. They were my houses, though. I never built a house for anyone else but myself. You know, I don't have or I never had a construction business. But I promised myself when I was a little kid that since my dad only had four tools in the house in the junk drawer, too. A hammer, a Phillips, a regular screwdriver, and a pliers. Not the guy you want to be stuck on a desert island with. However, at a bar with a baseball or football trivia contest, my dad would take home the gold. So, I promised myself at a very young age. I must have been 12 years old. I promised myself, as soon as I started making a little money, I'd buy tools. Build up a big collection so I'd never have to borrow something from someone again. And man, having your own set of tools really comes in handy. And if you buy them at rummage and estate sales, they may be a little banged up, a little rusty, but who cares? Good tools last a lifetime, sometimes three lifetimes. But like any hobby, collecting tools can get out of hand. When I finally sold my stuff in the States, I had everything. I even had an International Harvester backhoe and a dump truck. OCD, they'd call it today, I guess. Ask Captain Mango. He'll tell you about my tool collecting hobby. So that's one thing I miss about living in the States. Though it's not a big thing. Down here in Latin America, they still do have rummage and estate sale. But there's no sort of subculture like they have up in the States. You know, antique roadshow, TV programs, all that. Maybe the subculture just hasn't matured down here. I don't know. And even now, I've got another tremendous collection of tools. I still, on occasion, scour that website, Encuentro 24, that's Encuentro24.com. You listeners know about that, right? It's the Latin American Craigslist clone. I've bought things on that site, and I've sold things on that site, too. Even bought a few cars posted there. One more thing about tools. Men and their tools is sort of like women and their shoes. Well, I'm talking about real men now. I'd say most any guy born after 1990, that'd make him about 30-something years old, right? And younger, that'd be the Gen Y and Gen Z guys. They're a different breed. They can't fix anything and absolutely care nothing about tools. If the TV or refrigerator breaks, they just buy a new one. For example, with my last washing machine, I think it broke down three or four times. Fixed it myself till it just wasn't for this world anymore. Got a couple extra years out of it, too. You know, I like a good challenge, and if something breaks around the house, I'll always take a crack at it. Sometimes it's annoying, it comes at the wrong time, but I give it a shot. I figure I can hardly make it worse, and if all else fails, call the repairman. So anyway, in the very early 90s, I liquidated everything and found I didn't have nearly as much capital or cash as I planned. But I had plenty enough to get the hell out of Dodge. Though I was nervous about it. Nervous about how big a nest egg I'd need to survive. If I couldn't get some kind of viable business going. I knew my nest egg wasn't going to last forever, but I didn't live high on the hog, so I figured I could go 10, even 20 years without a job if I stretched it. Now, according to estimates, they were saying way back when in the early 90s that you could live in Latin America pretty much like a first world person on a third to one half of what you'd have to spend up in the States. And even though the odd expat I happen to know confirmed that, I still had my doubts. I didn't quite believe it. I thought, why doesn't the whole world know this? Why aren't the gringos all flocking down? Well, back in the early 90s, gringos and expats here in Latin America were telling me they were living on $600 or $800 a month. Now, adjusted for today's inflation, that's something like $1,500 a month. I wanted to believe them, but it still didn't quite sink into my head. Back then, in the early 90s, the average income for a single male was $20,000 to $22,000 a year. And I found out those few gringo expats I knew that were telling me you could live on $600 or $800 a month, I found they were not lying. They weren't exaggerating. Though you don't realize it in the first couple of months because you've got lots of new expenses when you first land in a country. Transportation, rent, a couple of deposits or two on that rent, utility hookups, meeting with lawyers and other professionals and stuff. But after you jump through those hoops and things settle down, you realize what a really great deal it is to live down here. Except, of course, if you're on the tourist trail or in a place like San Miguel Allende, Mexico, where the real estate is twice as much as it is in most other parts of Mexico. And I'll tell you, the gringos have arrived in a big way. Personally, I don't know why people go there. It's so gringoized. Every street sign's in English and Spanish. Every menu in English and Spanish, too, which probably explains it. Americans, especially older Americans, don't speak Spanish, and they feel rather good about the fact that everything's in English. Of course, if money's no object, you can live anywhere. Travel anywhere, too. Remember the story I told last week about the American in that Stephen Hawking wheelchair? He certainly wasn't your average paraplegic in a wheelchair. People with money have their likes. They like to live next to golf courses. And Mexico is suffering a huge, devastating drought right now, and golf courses are black holes for water. A little reference to Stephen Hawking there. We'll get into it in a future show. Now, I realize there have been massive rounds of inflation worldwide in the last couple of years since the lockdowns and COVID hit. However, you've got to compare how food prices and other basics have been jacked up in Latin America versus how food prices and everything have been jacked up by inflation up in the States and Canada. I've got some friends from Canada. They say it's absolutely ridiculous, the price of food. They're saying they're paying twice what they'd pay in the States. Yep, people down here, locals and gringos and expats, will grumble, but it's still much cheaper to live here than it is up in the States, and it always will be. Oh, and here's some really interesting, if not great, news. The Argentines elected a new president last Sunday, and because he's not part of the system, the media hates him, doing everything possible to make him sound like a nutcase. In fact, everything you read about that guy, coming from lamestream media, starts out with a story that makes him sound like he's nuts. For example, this article from Britain's Telegraph starts out by saying, in fact, it's in the headline. It says, Argentina's new leader is a chainsaw-wielding, English-loving, tantric sex expert. It goes on to say he plays in a Rolling Stones cover band, loves his dog so much that he had his favorite one cloned. Oh, he's outspoken, all right. I love that about him. Goes on to say he called a female journalist a donkey in a press junket and accused Pope Francis, who's also from Argentina, of being an imbecile and a representative of evil on earth. All right, so that's how the world has been introduced to this guy, Milei, who is now president of Argentina. Just to tell you how f***ed up the mainstream media is, here's what they never say about the guy. For the past 21 years, he's been professor of macroeconomics, economics of growth, microeconomics, and mathematics, teaching PhD students and graduate economists. He has taught on several economic subjects in Argentina and universities abroad. He's written more than 50 academic papers on economics. And get this, he's written 10 books on economics and the theory of economics. Since 2018, he's been ranked as the most interviewed economist on Argentine television, with over 235 interviews. Meanwhile, the dirty shit for brains popular media, who completely bow to their advertisers like Pfizer, call him a chainsaw-wielding, tantric, sex-observing, Rolling Stone cover band nutcase. Oh, and here's another thing the asshole media pundits fail to point out every time, that he obtained an economics degree and received 2 master's degrees in economics. Yeah, the guy's a nutcase, all right? The media absolutely hates him. Why? Because he said he's dedicated to slashing government expenditures, firing 50% of the government workforce. In other words, he says immediate and drastic changes will be ordered without delay. Number one, he says, I do not believe in public TV. It's become a propaganda mechanism for the government. So no more Argentine public TV. If people want public TV, the private sector can pay for it. By the way, the lamestream media's got a clip, a meme they keep playing about him, where he says in a news conference that he trusts his dogs more than he does the politicians in Argentina. They're better counselors and make better decisions than anyone in Congress. Now, really, how can you disagree with that? But they've cut that up in little memes, bits and pieces, and it's all over the internet, as if he actually takes advice from his dogs. So what's my take? Well, I've got my eye on Argentina as a great plan B in the very near future. I say let's give it a year or two, watch how it plays out, see if chaos really does descend on the place. It can't be much worse than it is now. Most of all, let's look at the real estate prices. So again, I've got my eye on Argentina as a great plan B in the very near future. That is if the new president doesn't get assassinated. I say, what's not to like about him? He's the first outsider to reach the presidency, and he's considerably farther right-wing than anyone who's ever held a position in the last 50 years. So then why did it happen? How did he get elected? Well, triple-digit inflation for the last 5 years means nobody in Argentina saves a dime. The workers spend it all as soon as they get paid. What few pesos are left over, they change into dollars on the black market and hold on to them. Funny thing, too, the Argentines don't know that the U.S. dollar is a piece of shit, inflating away from 7 to 10% each year. In any event, I'm glad to see Argentines are growing huevos. So then what else has Milei promised to do? He says once in office, he will immediately slash government spending, dollarize the economy, and eliminate central bank as well as key ministries, including those of health and education, since they are absolutely rife with pork barrel politics and corruption. You have to remember, Milei says, the ruling party, or some version of it, has been in power for the past 40 years. In that time, they've created a huge, intricate money trough for the government slugs to feed from. Now, the thing about his promise to get off the Argentine peso and go to the U.S. dollar, I think that's a very big mistake long term, but it's about the only thing you can do to a country with 140% inflation for the last 5 years running. It just might stabilize things for a while. We'll have to see how that goes down, since the black market in Argentina actually runs on dollars. Right now, access to dollars is strictly controlled in the legit markets, like banks, etc., where you can only pull out $200 a month. And you know, in one of his recent press spots, Milei was wielding that chainsaw, and he said he was going to dynamite Argentine central bank and do away with the cancer it's created, which is exactly what so many people in the U.S., and expats and gringos too with a brain, are saying. The U.S. should absolutely get rid of the Federal Reserve. If you recall, the U.S. Federal Reserve employs 200, or is it 2,000, PhD economists. What a cancerous, stinking sewer. The Fed. I say put them all in jail. Oh, and the media is reporting some other not-so-crazy things that Milei has been doing. He says he wants to cut off top trading partners, Brazil and China, saying he would not do business with communists. Does he mean business? I think so. Because no self-professed libertarian has ever been president of a country before. You know, I've seen a couple of Milei's YouTubes. I love those red-faced rants against the thieving and corrupt political class, as he calls them. He struck a nerve, all right, with the Argentine public. That's why he won. They're fed up with politicians they see as architects of their misery. Though inevitably, people will suffer. Argentina has an immense welfare system that needs to be dismantled. They have fuel subsidies, electricity subsidies, transport subsidies with, for example, bus tickets cost 5 cents. Not really, though, because the government is subsidizing the bus companies. To do that, they have to tax and or print money. They've been doing both. Sound familiar? Hey, I'd like 5 cent bus tickets, too. But nothing's for nothing. By the way, I noticed how all the usual controlled first world media sources are saying the election has plunged Argentina into uncertainty. You know, that's quite a claim for a country that already has the crushing uncertainty of 140% inflation. Now, I know most people don't get this because inflation in the States rarely pops over 10%. And when it does, people get really pissed. So here it is, stark and naked. What if you got paid $1,000 and 3 months later, it was only worth 800. 3 months later, that's 6 months in total, it was only worth $640. 3 months later, that's three quarters of a year later, it was only worth $512. In other words, in 9 months, you lost half the value or purchasing power of your money. Certainly, you'd be pretty pissed. You might even go to the voting booth, even if you never voted before because you hate politicians. You just might vote for the guy, hopefully, that wants to dismantle it all. Bring down the legacy system that's been sucking you dry like a vampire. Oh, and listen, it doesn't get any weirder than this. Do you know who Milei's opponent was in the election? A guy named Sergio Massa, who has been for some time the current economy minister of Argentina. In other words, the guy responsible for maintaining a solid, non-inflationary currency. Man, is that absolutely insane? Running the guy for president who's hugely responsible for 140% inflation? You gotta wonder, what shit-for-brains political hacks ever thought that was a good idea? By the way, I noticed that Argentina, with a population of close to 50 million, got their election results in less than one day. Why is it with some American cities and states it takes weeks? Duh. At least the Argentines got that right. By the way, a little past Argentine history is in order. Prior to World War II, Argentina had the largest gold reserves in the world, third biggest capital income and economy in the world, too. Then came Perón and his cronies, who continuously raised taxes and looted the treasury. Then came Eva Perón, who Madonna notoriously played in the Broadway show and movie version, Evita. Did you know that Eva Perón was a semi-pro prostitute who married Juan and then took power when he died? That would be like Biden getting a divorce and marrying Cardi B. She's a gold digger, right? But definitely more Hunter Biden's type. Anyway, Eva continued to loot the Argentine treasury, as did those who came after her, with both her and Juan Perón being great admirers of Hitler. They were dedicated socialists, too, allowing many Nazi war criminals to settle in Argentina. I'm sure you've heard that story before. Funny thing, too, even 80 years later, there are lefties in Argentina that still admire Evita as if she was a saint. Just as so many lefties worship at the t-shirt of Che Guevara. He's from Argentina, you know. Though Che lovers don't like to hear the fact that he murdered hundreds in a stadium after Castro took over, using mostly a baseball bat to kill and torture gays. Great hero, huh? Lots of spineless, brainless fools, mostly woke American adolescents and young adults, proudly wear Che t-shirts and beanies, brain dead enough not to know they'd have been killed or disappeared under the Castro regime. But I digress. So then can Milei, the new president, fix the failed socialist policies and entrenched bureaucracy in Argentina? Well, it won't go away easy. There are simply millions of Argentines on the dole, sitting on their dead asses in their houses, collecting their subsidy and social payments monthly. That's why I think there's a chance the old boy power structure will try to bump him off. I mean, look, he says in the first 90 days, his plans are to dollarize the economy, shutter the central bank, and close down 10 of 18 government ministries. That's 10 of 18. He'll privatize healthcare and education by giving vouchers to the poor so they can go to private doctors, clinics, and hospitals, which will, of course, piss off the generations of entrenched political slugs and people on the dole who've been receiving perpetual checks for generations. Now, I'm sure almost no one listening to this show has ever visited Argentina. Well, I have. And any country that covers cosmetic surgery and gender reassignment surgery within their national healthcare plan, that's not a country I would like to live in, not a country I'd recommend for a plan B. That's why I say give Milei a year or so. If he can eliminate all that, you just might be able to get in on the bottom floor of something great. Again, if he doesn't get bumped off first. The thing is, though, lots of times your political enemies don't necessarily bump you off. They bump off someone close to you or scare you with threats that they'll bump off someone close to you. So I'm wondering, if they bump off one of his dogs, one of his trusted political advisors, will he cave? Time will tell. By the way, he says he's been estranged from his parents and relatives for over 20 years, so there's not a lot of leverage there. He's single, got a girlfriend, no kids, so he's got less personal baggage when it comes to extortion and threats. Let's give it a year or so. We'll see. By the way, having attended Catholic schools all my young life and being a lapsed Catholic myself, when I heard he insulted Pope Francis, I thought, now, there's a guy to keep your eye on. Anyway, he must absolutely be the right guy for the job if the media is so against him. Though, really, I'm surprised the CIA couldn't rig this election for the Marxists. They missed out on doing that in El Salvador, too, with Bukele. You know, I thought it totally possible that the CIA would help flip the election. Because young Argentines have the socialist virus in their brains. They've had it for three or four generations. They're used to it. They think socialism is normal. They think 100+% inflation per year is normal, too. How sick is that? Anyway, all I can say is I'm interested to see how Malay cleans house. I can tell you this, the diversity and LGBT equity hires are in for a shock. Again, if Malay doesn't get bumped off first, or perhaps threatened clandestinely. So anyway, if you're wondering why I'm talking so much about this Argentine election, it's because I've been receiving lots of emails lately from people saying, what's your take, Johnny? What's your take? I actually have quite a few Argentine listeners. For example, this emailer writes, Johnny, what garbage they're saying about Malay. I'm from Argentina and don't believe what the media is saying. Malay is not far right at all. He's a libertarian nerd. He's the first Argentine president to have two master's degrees, both in economics. But the media never mentions it. They continue to smear him, saying things like, Javier Milei, far-right libertarian who's been compared to former President Trump, was elected Argentina's new president on Sunday. By the way, it's Alphonse writing this email. He says, here's the dirty tricks they play in Argentina that the outsiders don't know. Milei promised in his campaign to allow Argentines to own guns once again, legally. So the opposition, the other candidate, Massa, had TV spots showing a young child picking up a stray gun in the house and shooting his friend. Well, Argentine voters got pissed off at the blatancy of that ad. They said it was foul play and a cheap shot, an obvious and unconvincing stupid strategy. He says the Argentine public is smarter than that. Who would buy a gun for 2 months' salary and leave it on the kitchen table loaded for the kids to play with? Obviously, the party in power got some really bad marketing advice. The average voter can be dumb, but they're not that stupid. Well, thanks for that, Alphonse, but you know, some people are that stupid. Obviously, you haven't been to the Chicago hood lately. Then again, the gold-toothed ghetto dwellers in Chi-Town have an average IQ of a salamander. And again, I mean that in the kindest, most Christian sort of way. Oh, and isn't it funny? I know many Venezuelans who have escaped their country. All of them say Milei's election in Argentina is fantastic. Why? Because they came from and escaped a ruined socialist country with mega inflation themselves. Isn't it funny? Every single Venezuelan I've ever met despises socialism. In fact, in front of a Venezuelan, you give any positive points to socialism at all, you do so at your own risk. Oh, and hear this, I've yet to meet a Venezuelan who blames any of the problems at all on the U.S. sanctions. It hasn't affected them at all. They get products from China, India, Europe, South America. Just remember, the U.S. doesn't manufacture anything anymore. So when the U.S. State Department sanctions a country, it's nothing but a tiny slap on the wrist. And now, oddly enough, after so many years of so-called sanctions, Biden is making deals with Venezuela for their oil. What a bunch of hypocrites. Worse than hypocrites. They're criminals.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.